Welcome to the Firman Woods Contemporary Art Podcast, guest curated and presented by Subterra. I am your host and one half of Subterra, Marie-Chantal Hamrock. We invite you to get lost in the unknown as we take a stroll through rich woodlands, dark forests, and subterrestrial landscapes. As we navigate these eerie and unfamiliar spaces, we will explore artist talks, discussions, and original commissioned sound art. Dear listeners, can you believe this is the penultimate episode of the season? And as we near the end of our wonderful voyage through Xylophobia, we are pleased to present O God of Weather by Saoirse Horn. Saoirse Horn, or by her stage name Lamium, is a sound artist and painter based in Aberdeen. The name Lamium derives from a dead nettle that survives only by its resemblance to the stinging plant. And in that sense, at the core of Saoirse's work, there is a deep focus on survival through illusion and fictioning. O God of Weather combines elements of ambient music, folk song, and field recording, which together paint a vivid and imaginative world, rooted in messages of phantasm and fabrication. Somehow, through a painterly appreciation of texture, patience, and solitude, the artist manages to create a sensitive and ethereal act of balladry. O God of Weather considers how deeply weather affects our lives, and also how it can impede our access to woodland spaces. The work has a visionary awareness of multiple temporalities, giving the listener glimpses into the lived experience of the artist, while also offering interpolated fictions and folklores that lead to imaginative world-building. Painting through wave, tone, harmony, and storytelling, Saoirse's work feels both permanent and ephemeral in its reverence for an invisible yet powerful deity. This work might make one feel as though through the simple act of listening, they are part of some sacred incantation invoking the almighty God of Weather. So on that note, here is O God of Weather, followed by a fascinating discussion with the artist.
Thank you. I Listen to the Wind That Obliterates My Traces by Steve Rodin. And this piece is from the notebooks of Joseph Joubert. During the rain, there is a certain darkness that stretches out all objects. Beyond that, its effect on our body forces us to withdraw into ourselves. And this inwardness makes our soul infinitely more sensitive. The very noise rain produces continuously occupies the ear, awakes attentiveness, and keeps us on the alert. The brownish hue moisture gives to the walls, trees, the rocks adds to the impression these objects make, and the solitude and silence it spreads around the traveler, but forcing animals and men to be quiet and to seek shelter makes these impressions more distinct. Enveloped in his coat, his head covered, moving along deserted paths, the traveler is struck by everything, and everything enlarged before his imagination or his eyes. The streams are swollen, the grass is thicker, the stones are more sharply defined. The sky is closer to the earth, and all objects closed up on this narrow horizon occupy a greater space and importance.
Thank you.
I was just thinking to myself that there were moments as I was listening to it that I thought, oh, it could have been called this, it could have been called that. Like, but then the title that you came up with is so, like, it's like this grander thing. And I liked what you said about God fearing in your text that you sent us. So yeah, it'd be good to hear about your thoughts.
Thank you so much. Title. Yeah, it's a title that I've used a lot in saving files. There's so many files on my computer called Oh God of Weather 1, 2, 3, because it's something that I'm really interested in exploring, this mighty nature of the weather, and this impossible entity that you can't ever understand or see, but is constantly there. And I always have this idea of God in my mind, but it would be a Christian God in theory. And thinking a lot about weather, it is, especially the wind, it's something that is very, it's a constant, and you're taught that God's a constant. So I think there's a lot there. And this phrasing, oh God of weather, I felt was something that could be felt in so many different ways, like, oh God of weather in a fearful sense or an appreciative sense. It's this honoring.
Yeah.
And so that was the hope with the title finally being used for this piece. It was like, I'd finally honored oh God of weather, that there's so many demos and sketches and quick works that I hadn't quite made it. And then with like an hour or 40 minutes of sound, I felt like, okay, you've been honored now.
It had that sort of almost ceremonial quality to it in moments, you know, that kind of like it reaches crescendos, it has like peaks and like kind of a rhythm. And I'm always thinking also about kind of Christian deity and the kind of the theater of like Catholicism and, you know, the all of these things. And yeah, like you said about the wind being something that, or weather being something that's kind of intangible because it's just a constant and it's ephemeral at the same time. And there's and then I think that sound is such a great way to tackle that, because you cannot perceive, like, you can't see it in any way. And I mean, yeah, I know that obviously your background originally, you did your degree in painting, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And so I know you probably get this question all the time, but I think it's quite fascinating to talk about the relationship between painting and sound making, because you still paint too, don't you? So it's interesting how to talk about, maybe if you can, the processes involved in both and how they complement each other or how they're different.
Yeah. I actually love talking about this because everybody has a different answer. I said once to a tutor at Grays that I think painting is so much like making sound because of textural reasons is the strongest one for me, and this building of atmosphere and this building a surface. And I suppose the use of layering is a huge one. And I said this to a tutor and they were like, well, I think printmaking is like making sound. And it's just that it's all the same. It's all drawing. But for me, I think that every painting I made had atmosphere, or I hoped it would. It would be the most important thing for me was to create atmosphere with painting. And it is the same with making sound. It's the baseline. The first thing I do when I'm making a piece of sound work is create some ambience.
Yeah. Does it ever feel like a painting should have been a piece of sound, or a piece of sound should have been a painting?
Yeah, it does actually. Especially the paintings I've been making recently. And I think it's because when you have a dual practice like this, if one starts to frustrate you or you feel like you've hit a dead end, or exercised every muscle you could put into it, then you have the other. And sometimes I'm actually just taking out my frustrations on another material. There's like certainly a painting where I know I was just trying to get a sound piece right and I couldn't, and it's this painting is therefore like a representation of its failure.
And it leads on to something I was going to ask you about with like living in Aberdeen and, you know, being in kind of a peripheral part of Scotland that is pretty far north, and does have probably extreme weather compared to other places. And I don't know, because in the work there was this moment especially where there was a lots of kind of hollow wooden sounds that had a sort of like a reverberation on them, and there was a kind of empty feeling, or like this, it made me feel like I was in an empty house or an empty cottage or something somewhere rural, but there was this echo that felt like it was just one person there making this specific sound. And that kind of evoked to me, and it, maybe it's because I know you and I know where you stay and what kind of work you're interested in making, but yeah, I wondered if being in Aberdeen influences your practice in that respect, that kind of peripheral nature of being not in the central belt of Scotland.
Yeah, absolutely. It's especially because my family aren't here as well. In the winter, it feels like you're on an island, and it's especially bad when you're working and you can't leave these few meters around you, these few inches around you. And you know that if you exerted yourself a little, you could reach beautiful, beautiful spaces, beautiful scenery. But you don't have that energy because it's winter and you're hibernating and you're trying to get by. Mm-hmm. So you're just out of reach of the sea, the rivers, the mountains. And you feel like you can't get there. It's not like you're in this industrial city where you would have to drive for miles to see any sort of wild space. It is right there, but by the time you get there, it'll be dark. And
yeah,
it feels, I suppose it's a little bit colder, it's a little bit darker, and those little bits do make a difference on your experience of the season.
So obviously the theme of the podcast season is xylophobia. So I wanted to ask how you felt how that inspired your response to the theme. And I like that it's a kind of quite an abstract view, because we've had some artists do really specific kind of tree related works, and that's been so great as well, but it's so interesting to see how someone could interpret it in a different way as well.
Heartbreakingly, I actually don't know if I spent any time with trees at all in the making of this. Not really. I don't spend enough time with trees anymore. I've just been like touching concrete and then in my house. It's been quite isolating in terms of space. Month and a half, although I have a studio at Gray's, at the art school, and that would be my immediate access to nature always, because there's reasons to go there for your studio.
Yeah.
And it's right there on your doorstep, so you venture out. Otherwise, it's hard to justify the time to go out and be alone with nature.
Yeah.
Properly. So a lot of this work was dreaming about awarding myself the time to be outside. I didn't make it to Gray's, the weather and work and illness, and I didn't make it outside to these places that I have in my head as the most magical places I could ever be graced to visit. But this work for me was most of it made in my living room on these hardwood floors and alone.
Yeah.
And it's dark. It's a very happy, cheery piece. I'm just thinking about and watching videos of when I have been outside, thinking about going outside, creating AI images of woodlands, and watching like wildlife documentaries.
It did feel like that kind of, that there was like a, that quality of the intangible god of weather. It's like, I don't know, I guess it's also just the kind of lived experience of being, well, anyone but an artist in wintertime, having to work part-time or full-time to sustain your practice and being tired and somehow having to try and find the energy to not only make work, artwork in your own time, but also to kind of have these moments in nature that feel, for everyone, I think, few and far between, because it's just, there's just, we don't have the energy to do everything. And I guess maybe that hollow sound as you were, that I was talking about, it really did give me that feeling, you know. And I was interested in what you said in your writing about the relationship between folk instruments and wood, and the recordings of your friend playing, what was it, a banjo?
It's a banjo, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I want to talk specifically about folk music with you and how you feel about it and why you're interested in it.
Sure, absolutely. I also, the wooden sound that you're speaking of, I realize I never mentioned, but a lot of the samples I took were of my wooden floors. And it's why the wooden floors are such an important piece, because they're like a physical element that's come from trees. Mm-hmm. They're just completely real.
Yeah.
And then everything else in my home is like plastic and fake. And apart from these instruments, like you say, I have been collecting folk instruments for the past few years, hoping that I could master one of them, and then quickly tossing it off when I realize I can't, and only picking it up once a month. But the instruments themselves are such beautiful things to have and to hold and to own.
Yeah.
With the folk song, whether it's one that's legitimately passed orally through generations and then altered and altered again, or something that someone's written in the style of Woody Guthrie or so on, I think that there's this understanding that folk artists have a connection to nature and to the earth.
Interestingly, I was gonna maybe say about how folk music, if you think about archivists like Alan Lomax, who recorded all of these songs that would have been lost without before the, you know, invention of digital recording or whatever, recording in general, so that songs could be made listenable, because the whole thing about folk music is that it's ephemeral, right? It's just, you pass it through word of mouth, through oral tradition. And then something that you might agree is quite interesting is that broadside ballads, which were usually kind of songs about working class people, about nature, about the lived experience of not the upper classes, basically, were printed cheaply on, you know, the thinnest paper, and they were distributed for a penny, and they were, this were called penny sheets as well, so anyone could have one, and they were often used to decorate the home because they were so cheap, and they were a way of having, because they were often, yes, lyrical, there were the lyrics, And then there was also a woodcut illustration on it as well. So it was a bit of decoration that, you know, the everyday man could have in their home. But the reason I'm so fascinated by it in relation to your work is not only because of your interest in folk music, but because it has both a sonic element. There's the music, there's the lyric, there's this aural part, but it's a visual element as well with the woodcut illustration. And even though I know your paintings aren't just kind of, you know, illustrated versions of the stuff that you're thinking about in that sense, it's kind of a more abstracted way of looking at the ballad. And yeah, sometimes I feel like I'm a ballad monger, just collecting these things and trying to, yeah, make it in some way both sonic, make some kind of story both visual and aural or spoken, like through performance or through the podcast even or whatever. And there was a kind of a ballad-like element to the way that you worked through it, I thought, listening to the sound and the fact that it's in parts. Because in old, like in the Roxburgh ballads, for example, they would be like this part to the same tune or that kind of thing. And yeah, there was these like references to the to previous songs and the way that you are referencing all these versions of God of Weather, which is like, you know, just it being passed through word of mouth and changing every so often. And that thing of it being like intangible is so interesting, because sometimes if the paper that someone inherited to learn the lyrics to the song had a hole in it, if the lyrics were gone, they would just sing "There's a hole in the ballad," like, oh, as wow, the lyrics.
Oh, and I'd love that.
I think that that's so similar to what you've been talking about with this trying to, there's something about folk and the undescribable. Yes. And there's something hidden in it, it feels like.
It is. There's something hidden in it. There's something so deeply personal to the listener, to the player, that is like selfishly personal. Like, this is completely about me. This is my experience. This is my story. This is my tale. Yes. But yeah, it also will be yours when you listen to it or sing it or read it. And yeah, I love what you said, I'm a ballad monger.
Monger.
Love it. I once did play as a ballad monger when I went through some archives and I found an old folk ballad that I wouldn't say it's a bothy ballad, but I think it's likely because it's from Aberdeen archives. And it was, for me, it was a piece of like sapphic, like lesbian prose. I was like, this is lesbian. This is so sapphic.
Yeah.
Yearning, the love there. And yeah, towards the end, it states, you know, boy name, girl name. And it's interesting that I picked this up and I was like, this is exactly like my first love as a lesbian. Somebody's written it down and this is mine now. And I did a cover of it and I took out the names because it's my story that was written years ago.
And that's it. That's where you have that ability to just to change. And maybe, you know, I think both of us work with archival material. That's just the best part about it. And that's, well, this is maybe a good way to start talking about the role that fiction plays in these things, right? Because obviously, whenever you're interpreting a piece of history and archival material and you're reappropriating it for your own practice or your own, like, your own selfish want and desire, you're inviting fiction into that story, which probably already was riddled with fiction, but you're inviting your own fiction, I suppose. I know you mentioned world building as an interest of yours, and in this piece it feels like you do that so much. But then there are these moments of like reality, you know, where it feels like a field recording and you're kind of brought back from like these kind of almighty godly sounds to something that's a bit more material and a bit more like grounded. And is that something you were trying to do, or was it just, how did it happen?
Yeah, it comes in these waves of getting completely carried away with the sword fights and this myth that you've created around the song. And then maybe it's a field recording you took or I took years ago that I've found, and it takes you back to the exact moment you took the recording, and you remember that you're real and your experience is also interesting and valuable and magical at that. And I feel that every time I've taken a recording, with each step, I like to walk while I record, and then you can hear the footsteps as well. But it's like you're mapping it in your mind as well. So it's also, for me, it takes me back to the specific journey that I was on in that recording. And it brings some cinema to it almost.
Yeah.
It brings like, if the film was all special effects, you know, you need some
it's
setting.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And speaking of that, the poem, or the, sorry, the piece of the notes that you read from in the beginning of part two, when you talked about how the rain, well, when your voice talked about how the rain spreads around the traveler, enveloped in his coat with his head covered, it really, I don't know, it had almost this like medieval hermit like imagery to it that really worked so well with the banjo sounds and the, you know, the bits of music that we could hear, like plucked string instrument kind of music. But then when you said that rain obliterates my traces, I thought that was really interesting, and it's kind of doing exactly what we said is kind of intrinsic to that folk quality, where it's by reappropriating it, the person who did it before you's traces are obliterated, right? And then you do that, and you have your hood up, and you're this like anonymous kind of person that was in some part past of the song, or I don't know. It's just, it just worked so well to hear those words, because it really gave me shivers, that part.
Yeah, the wind that obliterates my traces. I think when I read that, it changed just that line. It changed everything that I felt about my work. It was like this line was written for me to remind myself every time I'm making new work, every time I'm stepping out into the world. It's that it's gone. It's gone afterwards, and it was what it was. It was what it was meant to be. Mm-hmm. And I made that sound, or I used that sound, and it was for its own purpose, and it's on to the next. It's personally, I think about it a lot in my own work, that it removes any idea of permanence, and that's really helpful.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of when I was a teenager and I was writing songs, I remember I wrote one about like the rain washing away all the pain from yesterday. And it's almost like an enlightened version of that for me.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure. I would love to read that book. It sounds amazing.
I would love to lend you this book. I don't know if I wrote this in my notebooks at all, but it's my uncle's book.
Yeah, you said that, right?
Yeah.
But then it got
destroyed by the rain.
That is the most poetic thing I've ever.
I know. And I bought a copy of this book after I'd read it at his house, and I need to gift this to him so he has his book back, because we spoke about it for a while after I'd read it. It's an incredible, incredible book, and you'd love it because it's archival. All the pieces of text are from all sorts of places, and there's a CD in it, and each track is from, I think he says, like, car boot sales and things.
Wow.
It's just an incredible, and then there's all these images. You'd love it. It's an incredible book. It's a
great.
Lot of what I make since I found it has been about this book, really.
The image that you sent with the work was so, so cool. It was so interesting. And I was wondering if you could talk about it, because it's just great.
Yeah, absolutely. I have been obsessed with making AI ice sculptures in woodlands. And what I tell it to make is ice sculpture of a bow and arrow in a woodland on a grey day. And then I change what the ice sculpture is off every time. And sometimes it's like this huge ice sculpture that takes a whole football field. And sometimes they'll give you this tiny little object. And it's an obsession. You can only generate so many images a day. I'm just generating these woodland images. And I have thousands, and I think it's because I would love to do a big painting of an ice sculpture in a woodland.
Wow.
But I have the access of generating this digital image at my fingertips, and it's difficult because I've spoken a lot about AI in artwork and its role in the world and the environment, and it's almost aligns with how I feel about everything, that it's all so scary and it's all so magnificent and so interesting. And I'll be like partaking in some AI work, fearful of what it's going to change about my life.
Yeah, like God fearing.
Yeah, I'm God fearing of AI, but I'm also obsessed with it. It's because it's like, bring me this image that I can't even dream of. I can only just try and dream of.
Yeah.
And then it will present it to you.
Why ice sculptures? How did that start?
Oh, I think, how did that start? I always liked when there would be an ice sculpture of a swan in a film.
Yeah.
It's just a picture of decadence.
It is.
It melts. It's insane. It's like, you're going to spend all this time sculpting ice, which will melt and disappear. It's incredible. I think that's what it is. It's an image of a piece of art that is ephemeral and will waste away into nothing. But then you have the image of it to preserve it.
Yeah.
But of course, the ice sculpture was never real. And the image isn't either, really. You don't think about it until you talk about it, but it's all the same thing. It's like you're always saying the same thing in different ways. I talk a lot about this with my friends who we have this debate going on weather forecasters and the weather forecast, meteorologists.
Yes.
And those that don't check and just like let the weather happen to them.
Mm.
And you know, especially being a baker, you need to know what sort of temperatures you're going to be dealing with.
Really?
So that the bread can rise appropriately, prove appropriately. So you're concerned with the weather greatly. Every single day you need to change the temperature of the water you're using for the temperature that it is outside.
Right.
And it's this like talking about the weather. It's this thing that controls so much of small talk, but also so much of the way we work and the way we function.
That's
every
so
day.
True. Yeah.
And every time I'm in a conversation about weather, you don't know that this is my whole thing. You don't know that I'm writing about this in my sketchbook later. To you, this is just a little chat. This is my whole thing.
That's, I'm never going to think about it the same way again. Sometime next time someone, I, an acquaintance makes a comment on the weather, I'll just think of you straight away.
Thank you. That's what I want. It's yeah. completely, it's really, I want everyone to be thinking about me as much as possible. The weather is brought up
of
a
course.
Lot.
Of course,
so.
Yeah.
Make yeah. sure you think about it.
Keep the ego inflated.
You know what I hate? When people are like, oh God, it's so awful, awful and rainy. Oh, horrible wind. And what are you going to do? Be like, I love that wind. No, you just kind of go along with it. Or you just, well, I do anyway. I'm a people yeah. pleaser, but I'll just be yeah. like, yeah, oh, it's a bit tricky, isn't it? Oh, it's yeah. slippy outside.
Yeah.
And see if I do that around someone and they'll go, what are you talking about? You love winter weather.
Yeah.
It's like, don't expose my inner workings. I need to pretend I'm on the same page as this person. I'm not trying to be one of these like, well, I'm different.
Yeah.
Not me.
No,
I love the
just
things
a
you
contrarian.
Hate.
Just
yeah,
a contrarian.
I'm a contrarian.
The mixture of it being highly personal and from your perspective, but also has this deity controlling it and being at the mercy of this deity.
Being at the mercy of is a perfect way of describing it. It's like I am choosing this like worship all the time, but it's a choice I have to make for whatever reason. And it's this, I think honoring is the word that I use to describe it the most, because I'm not communicating weather, I'm not speaking for it, I'm not trying to make any analytical comments that are right there for you to see about climate change. I'm just trying to appreciate it for what it is, and people have ideas of what rules them all the time. And many things do. We're ruled by lots of things. But I think it shows through, especially in winter, that we're ruled by the weather.
Yeah.
It's
we are God-fearing in the winter.
We are God-fearing in the winter. But, you know, it's like you can actually be just like trapped in your home because of the weather, and nobody thinks like, you know, this is a huge entity that decides whether we come or go and what we do. And well, people probably do think it, but nobody talks about it enough that we are just like, that's our overlord and we are abiding by its rules every day.
You can find more from Saoirse at her website, lamium.site, and on Instagram at Saoirse_horn_. Accompanying images to this episode are at our website. There are links to all of this in the episode description, as always. Listeners on Spotify are able to experience an accompanying video to this episode by artist Sapphire Goss. And for listeners on other platforms, you can find Sapphire's work on our website. All of this will also be included in the episode description, as always. Sapphire Goss is a multimedia artist who uses obsolete technologies to explore experimental materiality in hybrid collaborative forms to make work that grows, decays, and lives beyond the screen. She creates chimerical imagery using unexpected materials, looping and processing to make an analog uncanny, resulting in grainy, shimmering, otherworldly bursts of light and emotion, both moving and mysterious. And, as always, such a special accompaniment to this audio work. This episode has been edited by Astrid Bjorklund, the other half of Subterra. Thank you so much for listening to the Furman Woods Contemporary Art Podcast. If you enjoy our podcast, please make sure to positively rate, review, and subscribe on your podcatcher. It really helps other people find the podcast, and it makes us feel good about ourselves. This podcast series is part of Xylophobia, Firman Wood's Contemporary Arts 2-year program funded by Arts Council England. Visit firmanwoods.org for more information on our program and to sign up to our monthly email newsletter. Follow us at Firman Woods on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And make sure to check out Subterra at Subterrestrials on Instagram. Thank you so much for listening and for your continued support throughout the season. We hope to see you back here soon.